One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson. Happy Friday to you. Welcome to our last couple of hours of the week together here on the program. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and every day, Monday through Friday, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us there. And I am really looking forward to how this Friday is going to end. Let me save the best for last and give you what's going to happen in the 11 o'clock hour, and then we'll back into a conversation that I'm really excited to have here in the 10 o'clock hour. In the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about how Tucson compares to other cities in terms of graduate retention, creative workers, competitive pay, and market forces to be aware of. You look at cities like Las Vegas, Detroit even, Houston, Salt Lake City, cities that are smaller, bigger, comparative to Tucson, they're retaining U of A graduates. They might be more than we are, but they're retaining their graduates from their schools, right? So this is not number of students with degrees who are living there. This is they went to college in Detroit, in Salt Lake City, in Las Vegas. They're retaining graduates of their in-city schools at rates of 55% plus. And I thought, what would it look like if Tucson could say the same about U of A graduates? We'll talk about some reasons why not, some areas where we actually are doing pretty good, and try to come away with what could we do better. There's some obvious things, but I want to do a little bit of a critical approach at these numbers and see if we can come away with something valuable. But in our first hour, longtime friend, mentor, and author again, not his first time as an author, we have Thomas Wisely in the studio. I call him Tom, but he has just written a book called Living on the Edge, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. And Tom and I have been kicking it for years now in the city and have been working on intergenerational projects, and a lot of the work that we actually have done over the last, it's now 5 or 6 years, which is crazy to think about, have made its way into this book. If there's anyone listening, either younger or older, I think you're going to enjoy this conversation about how different generations can engage together productively and tackle the culture that we are living in today. So I'm just looking forward to this conversation. That's our Friday show for you, Tucson. 790-2040 is going to be your opportunity to engage with our live line, to call in, and to interact. And I certainly hope that you do. Tom, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much, Zach. It's good to be here.
I am really excited to be talking in this venue together. We've been talking for, I think it is 6 years now, before babies, before marriage, before career. You and I huddled down in a room on your property and talked about life and culture and generations.
Certainly before you admitted you had a girlfriend.
Tom gives me a hard time about this. In front of Charlotte, too.
Yes.
It wasn't that long.
No, actually it wasn't.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was funny. But Tom was one of the people that knew that, hey, you know, I'm dating this girl named Charlotte, and it's not our first time, and it's getting serious, and we might make a go of it. So you were one of the first to know.
Yeah, I was, and we were pleasantly not surprised. We were just pleased, especially when we met Charlotte over dinner at our house. Sandy and I really enjoyed that time together. We still remember it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the running joke is that I was the only one surprised about marrying Charlotte. She knew, you knew, everybody else knew. It was just like, when is Zach going to get on board? Because it seriously needs to happen. Let's get going. So I was the last one on the train in some ways. But
we men are not known for our intuition, and we're kind of known for being a bit slow on the uptake. But nevertheless, I mean, about some things, you're very sharp in so many other things.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
This was not anything serious. It was funny. You know, there was, I forget what we were doing, but Charlotte was like, well, I thought you were just going to kind of read my mind. And I went, for millennia, men have not been able to do this. Why did you think it would change with me now? You know? Oh, man. So just to set it up for our for our listeners, so this is not one hour of just kind of inside conversation that doesn't make sense to anybody else. How did we meet? How did we get going? There was a big project that you and I worked on together. Can you just kind of give our listeners a little bit of our history?
Well, the first time we met, I think, was at the Tucson Mission Network meeting, mm-hmm. and Sandy and I were yep. assisting in that ministry, that work, and you came to me one day while we were there and asked if we could meet together and talk about some issues, and I said, sure, we did. And that started yeah. a relationship that we had, which later evolved into a kind of a mentoring relationship.
Yep.
And then that evolved further, about a year and a half or 2 years later, I think, into something more. It really came out of your question. You looked at me across the room and you said, hey, could we take this to a little larger venue? And I wondered, yes, what venue would that be? And you said, we could bring some other people into this, different generations, and talk about issues. And thus was born the idea of the Intergenerational Communication Gathering, the IGC. And so we've met for several years.
Yeah.
In that venue.
You know, going back to that first gathering you talked about, you have me mentioned in your book, and you know that I have you mentioned in my book, because you came up to me and you said, Zach, I will be your ATM anytime you need it. Now, you weren't talking financially in that case.
No, obviously.
But you were you were talking about if you need advice, you need mentorship, you need connection, you need resources, you need experience. Zach, anytime you feel you need those things, know that I'm around to give them to you. And it made it in the book because I think that's one of the qualities of a mentor, is someone that another author put it, that at a certain age, you should have a mindset that you're now just cleanup on aisle five. Right? Work with the younger generation, know that a lot of mistakes are going to be made, know it's going to be messy, but put yourself in these kind of vulnerable, difficult moments of intergenerational relationship, because that's just what an older generation should do. And you've always exemplified a willingness to live on the edge and to engage intergenerationally. I thought that was important to bring up because it's so much of what this book is about and so much of what you're about, Tom Wisely.
Well, it couldn't have been just one way. I needed to hear from you. I needed to know what millennials were really like. I mean, I had heard so much about millennials, you know. I mean, they're this and they're that, and, you know, they need comfort and they need encouragement. All, you know, you've heard all of that stuff, but I began to see in you a whole lot different, different things. I saw... Yeah, well, intelligence, of course. I saw also compassion and concern for the city. I saw actually a global concern that others had never talked about. So it has been a learning experience for me too. This book could not have happened. And by the way, it's a small book. It's only 86 pages or so. That's not because millennials don't read, but it's 86 pages. But,
could be true.
You know? But, well, I know some older people who don't, you know. But anyway, and it's not my first attempt at, you know, I've published other stuff, but all of that was way too big, 500 pages.
Right.
Who's going to read that now? I don't even look at it very much.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you talk about in your book, Intergenerational Understandings. Before our first break, can you describe what you were surprised about when you and your wife, Sandy, took on the challenge of hosting intergenerational conversations? And these conversations were an attempt to get multiple generations, not just millennials, but really the major four or five generations that are in the marketplace today, to talk about issues of culture and politics and sociology and life, tackle difficult issues from an intergenerational perspective. What was something that surprised you and encouraged you over the last 4 or 5 years in that?
Well, you know, some people, the only exercise some of us get is jumping to conclusions. And I found that I was guilty of that too. I assume that my traditional people, the you know, the people in my generation or other generations would jump at this, and they'd be really anxious to communicate with millennials. I found that it was very difficult to draw in. It soon became clear I'd have to drag in boomers, Gen Xers, others of other generations to come and gather around and talk about issues from a generational perspective. I'm not sure why that was so. Even to this day, I don't understand it. Maybe we're too much product of our worldview, which I cover in the book.
Right, which I think we can get into in the next segment. But just to summarize, when it came to kind of this reciprocal mentorship, what I hear you say is it was harder for older generations to engage and to stay consistent than a younger generation. And it's interesting because I've said that so often on this show. I've said, put the stereotypes away. When you look at millennials, you're not looking at a generation that is saying, get out of the way, you had your time, you messed it up, it's time to move on. That's the stereotype. It's not true. I have found kind of that 20 and 30 set to be really open to intergenerational relationship at a higher level than other generations. And I don't think we take advantage of that enough within organizations or at a city scale. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Totally agree with that. And I would like to find ways to enhance, to enlarge, to encourage. Are there other words I can use? Other generations to get involved in this. You know, we live in a time of tremendous misunderstanding, misinterpretation, miscommunication. And I think that could be ameliorated by people actually talking to each other and with each other. We tend to talk at each other these days. We need to find a venue, some place, somehow, to be able to look at each other in the eye and say, this is what I think, but do that in openness and not closedness.
Right. So out of this experience, you wrote a book called Living on the Edge, Tom Wisely, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. Tell me about the title. Tell me about the subtitle.
Well, risky advice is kind of something that kind of grows out of our lifestyle. As our family, we have lived on the edge. In fact, my son began a program, an educational study abroad program called Living on the Edge. And the reason he did that was because we've always lived on. We lived in Thailand and Cambodia during the Vietnam War, and we were always on the edge, that sort of thing. And then we were first cross-cultural communicators of the gospel in Southeast Asia through Cambodia, Laos, and Indonesia. So we've always kind of lived on the edge. And then the other part, the risky advice part, comes out of my connection with millennials. I never thought that people would be interested in advice, especially from me. What have I got to say? You know, 80-year-old guy, I'm living on the edge trying to live. Actually, we're in good health and all. And my kids think I'm living on the edge when I drive. But nevertheless, it's living on the edge is a good thing. And I want to encourage people to get out of their comfort zones, to get out of their safety net living, and to get out on a place where they have to depend upon God and find Him relevant to the new things that can come up in their lives. So the advice that comes out of this is not really, well, I think you ought to do this, but rather, this is what I have learned through our intergenerational communication gatherings. These are the questions that came out of those gatherings that we've had for the last 4 years. So these are things that I think we think together we might want to share with other people. This is not really my book. It's really the book of Zach and Melanie and Misha and others I could mention that sat around the table and we talked sharing from our own generational perspective.
This is a great segue to our second and third segment of the show because we've learned a little bit about chapter one, right, which is called Who Am I? You kind of explained a little bit about who you are, Tom Wisely. In the next segment, a lot of our listeners, because we've had this conversation on the air, are still trying to figure out who are these millennials, right? And how do we exist in a workplace and a in a life place where there's now five generations. Now, you talk about intergenerational understandings. Would love, as someone who is, you mentioned your age on the air, so I will, you're in your 80s and have this life experience. You write about what you've learned about this generation. A lot of our listeners are still wondering what to make of us. So if you are interested and you are listening and you're interested, 790-2040, we're going to talk about intergenerational understandings. And then in the final segment, we're going to talk about risky advice. Don't let education get in the way of learning. Build a shelf in your mind on which you place things you don't understand. Don't burn your bridges. You might have to cross them again. Risky advice from a senior millennial. So much more to come with Tom Wisely. We're going to go to a break. 10:30, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. Making sense of these millennials. That's what we're going to tackle in our next segment. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to this Friday edition of the show. I'm Zach Yenser. We talk about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future every day here, 10 to 12 on the program. And we are closing out our week here in the first hour by talking to a longtime friend and mentor of mine, and now an author again, Tom Wisely, about his new book, Living on the Edge, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. We're talking about intergenerational differences and understanding. So I've talked about generations. You've heard my thoughts, but Tom is, are you 80 on the dot or in your 80s?
3 months into it.
3 months in. So Tom is 3 months into his 80s, has spent really an almost majority part of the last decade really engaging in intergenerational conversation, understanding worldview, and I think just an elder statesman approach to a younger generation is really valuable. And I want to talk about your risky advice really from a life well lived. Risky advice from a senior millennial, and you have some great advice, and we're going to talk about that as well. But who are these millennials, right? Now these young 20s to late now 30s generation living amongst us, these odd animals we call millennials, Tom. Help us make sense of it.
Well, it seems to me that you can't use the word millennial without using the word technology, right? I can tell a millennial when I go into a restaurant by the phones that are either in the purse or in the hip pocket, or whether it's in their face trying to eat some spaghetti because the phone will have spaghetti all over it, but they'll be talking into that phone, right? Or punching it or doing something. And I know that a person is a millennial by looking at their thumbs. Millennials have skinnier thumbs than us older people.
We exercise them more.
Well, there you go. Our
thumbs are tight and fit.
See, millennials have to ask the question, why do these traditionalists use their index finger to poke at the phone when...
We do wonder that.
Yeah. Well, the reason why is, you just look at my thumbs. They're wide. So whenever I use the thumb, I usually punch three keys at once. So you use the index finger because it's about the size of Zach's thumb.
That's true.
Yeah.
We have evolved thumbs.
Yes, there you go.
We've evolved them to text.
Yeah. It's called mutation, I think.
Yeah, that's the better word. We have mutated thumbs.
Yeah, you got a mutated thumb there. But I think I have a mutated brain because I, out of my... Basically, my early studies were, in Bible and theology, but really more following that was really more anthropology and sociology. Those studies took me into who were people, what made people tick. And that started when I was in high school, sitting at a bench when the teacher handed me a frog and told me to dissect it. I did so, and afterwards I thought, well, here's the frog, all dissected, penned, and labeled as I tried to label it, and I got a C- for that course, for that project. And I ended up thinking the frog is dead, but people, they live. And even at the age of, 16, it hit me that people were interesting and important, And so I really have gone that direction. And so I've been interested in the millennial worldview. What makes millennials tick? I'm interested in that question. I think everybody should be, even as millennials, we should be wondering about why Gen Zs are right. What makes them tick. And so it goes. And that has brought me into this.
In the book, you get into, as a group, which if you just joined in listening to us, Tom and I have been a part of a group that looked to tackle politics, immigration, theology, culture, materialism, major social, political, and culture issues from an intergenerational perspective. Yeah. So in the book, you talk about millennial worldview as it pertains to these issues. You get into politics and social worldview. What have been some of your findings? This is a news and talk show. This is exactly the place to get into answering questions that I think many of our listeners have is, when it comes to Bernie or Kamala or Elizabeth Warren, why do we see younger people drawn to that? When, I will have listeners ask, why do young people not seem to have the same level of understanding of the different wars and things that we've come through as a country. Young people, I think our most defining moment was September 11th. We haven't lived through war. We haven't lived through lack. You talk about all of these things. As an older individual, how would you advise an older listening audience, the component that's older, to understand where young people are coming from? Where are we right? Where are we wrong?
Well, right and wrong, I don't think I can speak to that. Perspectives I can speak to. I think that, my world was different than yours, Zach. I was born the year that, Adolf Hitler invaded Poland.
Yes.
Now, of course, I wasn't aware of that. But the few years after that, I became very aware of it because World War II ensued and my wife was born on Pearl Harbor Day. Mm. It's a war. In the sense of really living through war has been pretty much my life. We lived in Thailand throughout the Vietnam War from 1965 to 1975. Then, of course, we were, everybody can my age and of course down younger can remember where we were when the towers came down, 9/11. We know that, but I think that millennials haven't lived through that experience. And, Pavlov was not wrong. With the bells ring, the dogs eat. And I think the existential experiences we actually have condition, they do not determine what we think or who we are, but they certainly condition us just as Pavlov's dogs were conditioned by that. So I think that millennials tend to live have a different perspective on Bernie and Harris and the squad have a different perspective on that than we do. I wrote my dissertation for my PhD was on Marxism, Buddhism, and Christianity. It was another 500-page treatise, a tome, because I lived through that experience from 65 to 75, then 75 to 80. I went back to graduate school, and I reflected on that. So I have a view of Marxism and different forms of socialism, democratic, scientific, third world socialisms. I have a different view of that than most millennials do, but I think I don't judge millennials for that because millennials have not had those experiences, and they've seen, I think, what has been described for them, a failed democracy. So they're looking around honestly, with integrity, trying to cast around. So this is why so many voted for Bernie. In my view, Bernie was just touching the surface of socialisms, and he didn't do that very well. Denmark and Norway are not the havens that he tried to describe when he was wanting to become president, but nevertheless, that's the way it came out. That's the way it fell out. And, so I think it's good to be able to discuss this, and do it without rancor. Another part of my book is, one of the pieces of advice that I like to give is be discerning, but don't engage people who are closed. That doesn't mean don't listen, but don't engage, if you engage someone who is closed on a subject, no conversation evolves, only debate and argument and further become further embedded in the position that one holds. So that's the only pieces of advice I can mm-hmm. throw out at this point.
What is, if you had to summarize it in two or three sentences, what is the millennial worldview and what is the traditionalist worldview? And that's a name for a generation that is above boomers, if I'm remembering correctly, Tom. So that would be kind of 65 plus, would be, they're called the silent generation or traditionalists.
Builders.
Well, what's the worldview of that greatest generation and the worldview of millennials today? Help us sort this out.
Well, that's a big question. I hope I can summarize it succinctly. I think for the builders, it would be highly individualistic, strongly deterministic. We tend to feel that a tremendous responsibility for remaking. That's the thing that came out of World War II, having to rebuild Europe, rebuild parts of Asia, and even rebuild parts of the United States, sociocultural. However, with the millennial worldview, as I mentioned earlier, being a technological approach, but that's only one word, I think is more collectivist. Collectivist in the sense of we are a group, but we aren't connected that tightly. I find millennials tend to have artificial relationships. Now, that's not my description. That's a description that comes out of millennials, the mouths of millennials, who say to me, I have all these connections, but I don't feel really connected with anybody. And that's been described in the literature as relationships that have evolved through technology, whereas my relationships were evolved through person-to-person contact.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that helps, but I think that's off the top of this head.
Yeah. So if someone older listening may resonate with that goal of a little bit more individualism, a little bit more of building, a little bit more of responsibility to the institution.
Yes.
You see that in church movements, culture movements, national movements from, you know, those 60, 65 plus. And I think that will make sense to a lot listening. 790-2040, if you have anything to add or comment on there, this is our live line, 790-2040. Give us a call. We're trying to sort some of these things out. The younger set is a little bit more, kind of more collective, more collaborative, and also has a worldview that is framed through technology and a connection to the broader kind of global landscape through technology. And
I would just add that the word collaboration that you used leads to a kind of collectivism. When I use collectivism, I don't mean it in the sense of communism. I don't mean it that way. I mean a sense of groupness. Millennials know millennials. There's, in that sense, there's a collective awareness of we are a group, but there's not a tight connectedness within their connectedness. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm totally with you. We've talked about even at a city level in Tucson. I've talked to a millennial before on this program. And I said, Tucson is really great at community. We're good at community. And she goes, really? I mean, if you really dig in, how connected are we? Right? On the surface, we are. We get in the right rooms. We have the right conversations. But how really do we actually work on things together? How well do we execute together? How well do we actually make progress together? And so I'm on that page, certainly from a millennial standpoint, is, you know, how do we cut through kind of that artificialness and have real communication and real relationship? Before we close, and this will be a segue to our last segment here, Tom Wisely, author of Living on the Edge, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. What are some of the strategies to cut through? I mean, we can have these philosophical conversations all day, but when our listeners go back to work on Monday, wherever their work is, we live in a time where there's now five generations actively working in the workplace. We've really never been in this place before. What's the key to cutting through some of these things and living and existing together when it seems like the temperature is so turned up and we exist in our silos and we don't have intergenerational communication at any level. Any thoughts on that before we go to a break?
Oh, I thought we were breaking. There we go. I think that the next section is something that I really want to get into because that's where you might say the rubber meets the road, where we really get down into how does all of this work together? I think that the idea of worldview is absolutely essential to the understanding of people. We tend to look at each other as if we know the other person, and we really don't. In looking at Zach, I have to look at him not just as Zach, a guy that I've enjoyed getting to know and who's brought stuff into my life, but I also have to look at him as he is a representative of his world that he lives in. It's a different world than I've lived in. So the worldview, the concept of worldview, from both an anthropological and a psychological point of view. Psychology looks at worldview one way and cultural anthropology is slightly different. We take more of the culture in mind. But nevertheless, both of those disciplines from which worldview kind of evolved into other disciplines. Now you speak of in terms of historiography and other disciplines, but to really know a person as a representative of his culture, you have to get into the broader area of how he looks at his world. And I would like Zach to look at me in terms of the world that I came out of and that I represent. I don't want to hold my world up as the world, but it is a world.
Mm.
And Zach's is not the world, but it is a world. And together, we are living in a world. And we have to live comfortably in that world, respectfully with each other. I think that if we could do that on a broader scale, we wouldn't have this angry vitriol being thrown at each other through the airwaves, online. I mean, it's horrible, the things that are being said, not only about the president, but by those that want to get him out of being president. I mean, the language reflects total misunderstanding. I think of it this way: two ships passing each other during the night, neither with all of their lights out, and running on silent.
Right.
They're not wanting to communicate with each other.
Right.
They're doing their best to avoid each other, and yet they're bound to. They're almost ready to collide.
I think you're right, Tom. I think this leads, I think we would do a disservice if we tried to get into some of the specifics, because you put specifics in this book of how do we turn the lights on those ships, to keep going with that metaphor. What's some of the advice? I think I'm very troubled as well by what I call blunt force tribalism, which is what I think we're living in right now, where it's about how many people are in my group and how big is the stick that we get to whack the other with. And it's this constant divide growing, and it's tribal. How do we cut through that? Tom Wisely has some thoughts, certainly from a generational perspective. 790-2040. This is an opportunity to call in and talk to a senior millennial about some of the social, cultural, and generational divides that through his work he's been able to cut through and to get things done around. He's written a book, Living on the Edge, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. We'll be right back to talk about his risky advice, part three in the last part of our interview with author Tom Wisely. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and I'm joined in studio with Tom Wisely, author Tom Wisely, who just released a book called Living on the Edge, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. And in the first segment, we talked about how this book came about, and there's actually a connection to different work and different conversations that Tom and I have had over the years here in Tucson. We talked about who are these millennials, right? The need for intergenerational understandings. But then the book goes into a little bit of mentorship, I would say, on the part of Tom Wisely here. His subtitle is Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. And he provides some interesting thoughts. And the one that intrigues me to get us started first that I'm interested in would be don't burn your bridges. You might have to cross them again. We're starting to get some phone calls about your book, Tom, which is exciting. So let's at least start the conversation on this one before we go to our phone lines. Don't burn your bridges. You might have to cross them again.
Well, I got that from a friend who told me that, actually. I was working in an organization, and he was thinking of moving on, doing something else. And then he just passed that on to me. It's been good advice to me because I've made some changes, professional changes, as I'm sure that others will do over time. Rather than walking off in anger or self-pitying, you know, you don't understand me, you didn't give me my proper raises, you didn't give me that advancement, I'm going to go someplace else and eat worms, etc. No, find the best way. Don't burn that bridge. Keep that bridge intact. Good reason for maybe revisiting. Maybe you may never want to go back to that position or to that business, but you should always be able to cross that bridge in terms of communication, being able to have relationships with people that are there.
Yep. You know, this is even one of my mantras on the show, Tom, and how I conduct myself on the show. Tucson is too small of a town to burn bridges. Inevitably, you'll have to go back and cross them when you need something or when you want to do something. I think the only way you get things done in this town is to not burn your bridges. Mm-hmm. And I see way too many people on both sides of the aisle. That's their practice, that blunt force tribalism. There's a joy in getting your gang together and whacking the other side.
Exactly.
And then you don't realize that you're going to have to cross that bridge to get something done. We have Chuck on our live line. Chuck, I hope you have a question for our senior millennial in the studio for Tom Wisely. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, Mr. Lively. I'm a senior baby boomer.
Very good.
Okay. Anyway, when it comes to millennial, I have a very difficult time dealing with them. I don't do it very often, but I have a very difficult time. One of the things I have a difficult time when I'm talking to them is their moral values are just right down the drain. They have no moral value. I mean, the stuff that comes out of their mouth, and I'm talking about some four-letter words that I just never use, they're very comfortable with it. You know, and that really bothers me. Really bothers me that they can't be a little more respectful and mindful of who they're talking to and what they're talking about. So that's one of the things that bothers me.
Well, thanks,
do you
Chuck.
Have any comment?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. I appreciate your comment. Actually, I was in the U.S. Navy, and I heard a lot of language aboard ship that probably is about the same as what you hear here. But I hear your words, and I distinguish between believing millennials and non-believing believers. I think people have, it's not that they don't have moral values as a group. They just have different values than yours and mine. They have a set. And then, of course, your believing or Christian millennials are going to be guided by a Christian ethic and a Christian morality. So maybe you've been dealing with those who don't. Now, I have a hunch that if you'd go to San Diego, down to the shipyards there, you'd hear the same language coming out of Gen Xers or Boomers or worse, because I heard a whole lot when I was aboard ship, that sort of thing. So there's a certain sense in which I hear your experience, and I would never discredit that. I had it, too, when I was in the Navy, but there are others. Maybe you need to engage some Christian millennials. Come to the church I go to. You won't hear that language there.
Speaking even past a religious background, what have been your thoughts on the overall morality or community centered focus of the millennial generation? Are you encouraged? Are you discouraged? What are differences between older and younger in that way?
Well, I can appreciate Chuck's comment because I think he's right, generally speaking, but I wouldn't place that with just millennials. I would say that boomers have a rich vocabulary as well. However, the question again is exactly what, Zach, exactly what was the question you wanted to address there?
Well, I sensed from Chuck a concern about the morality of the next generation, and if there is a sense of family and community and building and investing into the community. And I just wanted to see if you had any insight on that as well.
Well, I think that the millennial generation is a product of their education, which has been largely relativistic. Ethical relativism, this has been, you know, been fed them from high school or right on up to the university level. So that ethic evolves into behaviors and into lifestyles. So I think they reflect the world out of which they've, the world in which they have been inculcated all of these behaviors and things. I'm not sure that the rest of it has that much to do with it, frankly. Maybe it does.
This next piece of advice that I wanted to get to might actually actually help to continue the conversation Chuck started, and that is avoid engaging people who are closed. And I think whether it is social issues, political issues, sociological issues, there's a lot of open ground for an older generation to speak into a younger generation and mentor, and for also a younger generation to help and mentor an older generation. I think it's reciprocal. But you say avoid engaging people who are closed. We've got about 5-6 minutes. Let's at least get through that one. What do you mean by that?
Engage is the word, meaning you're going to get into a serious conversation. And when I get into those kinds of conversations with people, I want to talk to open people. I take this idea from Paul Hebert. He's the one that... said to me once, there are closed liberals, there are closed conservatives, there are open conservatives and open liberals. You can have good conversations with open liberals and open conservatives, and but it's very difficult to have a really in-depth conversation if you're going to deal with issues that are deeply controversial. It's very very difficult to do that at any depth with someone who's closed, and that would be both closed conservative or closed liberal, and you have closedness on both in both camps.
Right. This one might be another one. When I hear questions like Chuck, there's certainly tactics. You and I started with how do we create intergenerational reaction that's positive for ourselves and for our community? You say that questions are better than statements. Mm-hmm. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think it's better to come up with a question rather than make a statement to somebody. So rather than all builders are absolutely individualistic and hard-nosed and hard-headed, maybe it would be better to say, how would you describe people of your generation when it comes to being determined to do something? You ask a meaningful question then that gets to, rather than making some kind of broad statement about them, millennials are all technological automatons. No. To what extent does technology impact my millennial friends, something like that.
I think we have time to squeeze in one more call, maybe two. We'll see how it goes. We have Richard on our line. Richard has a question for Tom, author of Living on the Edge, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. Richard, I appreciate you calling in. Go for it.
Great show, Zach. Tom, the millennials, if we're going to generalize, are they rebellious at all? In other words, you know, the World War II generation raised the baby boomers who were very aware of the horrors of war. So when Vietnam came along, the baby boomers were in the street trying to stop it. You saw the Iraq War. You saw, again, the baby boomers out there with some Gen Xers. But are millennials willing to hit the streets to fight for democracy? You called it a failed democracy. Are they willing to get out and do the dirty work?
Great question, Richard. About a minute and a half, Tom. Go for it.
Yeah, I'll see if I can keep it a minute. That's a great question, Richard. I use that term, failed democracy, by the way, out of what how it was described by Bernie Sanders and by those who are in that camp. I don't like to generalize to any generation that they are all like that, and I think you would understand that, Richard, that none of us really totally mirror everything about a generation. So I find that there are some who are, as you described, but I find a lot who are not. Again, it's I think it's a people among whom you participate in life. I go to a church where it's 90% University of Arizona students, and they're probably mostly, well, they're millennials. And I don't find people like that at all. There's some who are a little, there's those some who are left of center, there's some who are right of center. But because we are open to each other, I think we can talk about difficult issues, and we have and do. Have had programs in the church where we do talk about issues like that. So maybe a broader representation is what you would need, Richard. But thanks for the question.
You know, I think to another piece of his point there, I think young people are willing to get out there and to be a part of shifting what they want to see shifted. I think that still requires mentorship. I see that on the ground every day, that we have a desire to do things. We don't always know how. And that doesn't mean we're doing it wrong. It just means we need some advice and mentorship on how to do it well. So yes, I think there is a desire to get involved, and I think we're going to continue to see that. Tom, we've got about 30 seconds. Someone wants to go and buy your book. Where do they go and where do they find you?
Amazon.com, and you can get it either as a Kindle book if you like to do Kindle, or you can buy it as a paperback.
Tom, thank you so much. I've been really looking forward to this time together. Thank you for coming on the program and for your wisdom and a life well lived. I appreciate you, sir. That wraps up our conversation with Tom Wisely, Living on the Edge, Risky Advice from a Senior Millennial. When we come back to hour two, we're going to talk about Tucson's talent retention, our wages, our creative class, and more. An hour of wrapping up this week. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll see you in a minute.